I remember one evening in the pouring rain, and in my heart was an aching pain.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, sorry about that weird Skype problem.
How are you feeling?
I'm exhausted. I did not get enough sleep.
What time did you get home?
Oh, God. Probably like 3. I didn't drink that much, so I don't feel as bad as I could, but I definitely stayed up too late.
Well, let's clue people in.
Sorry.
That's okay. This is Nathaniel from the Film Experience, and I'm here with Joe Reed and Katie Rich, and both of them were out very late at the Inside Llewyn Davis premiere last night.
Oh, you know, Joe was a good boy and went home and did his work, and I was the one who stayed out too late and gawked at Garrett Hedlund from a distance.
His hair looked fantastic, even from the little bit that I saw.
We were having a long conversation about if it was a chignon or what kind of ponytail it was, because it was very elaborate. he is a good-looking man. I can confirm that for you.
I can confirm from meeting him on the road party.
Oh, man.
And he's also really sweet in person.
Oh, that's so nice. I've been raving about him and On the Road for so long, for anyone who thinks he's, like, bland, because he's very, very handsome. And
yeah, no, he has his moments. Yeah. Did you talk to anybody?
No, I just talked to my friends who I was there with. It was is that kind of party where there's a bunch of famous people and you're like, nah.
Yeah.
They don't know me and I don't have anything to say, so I'm just gonna
Nice.
You guys want me to talk more about a party? I guess I really want to hear about the details.
Joe was just before we started recording, Joe was saying that Carey Mulligan was very beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I saw her from a distance as well. And there was a girl sitting in front of me in the theater who was dressed like exactly like her character in Shame, which seemed very... I did not know that character was a style icon, but...
Maybe to this girl.
I know. It's very a deep cut style.
Someone should do like a fashion report from these New York Film Festival premieres, but just like for people in the audience. We're like, my friend and I were sitting there and we sort of, somebody walked by and he was just like, somebody wore a beret to a film festival. It's like, that is as on the nose as I've ever seen before in my entire life.
Yeah, the New York Film Festival, because it's like a...
That was a nod to Greenwich Village in the 60s, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Of course,
exactly.
A corduroy coat. But I feel like, you know, you go to Sundance and people are just kind of wearing parkas and whatever because they've taken a long time to get there. But I think New York Film Festival has much more of like a sceniness to it. So you definitely get a lot of people who are like, oh, hello, I'm at the film festival.
But it's that Upper West Side, like, out of time scene where it's just sort of like nobody's really ever very current. So it's just sort of, I don't know. And then there was that ridiculousness with the drunken, perhaps heroin afflicted... probably homeless person in front of us. It was a
weird
screening.
I feel like
screening.
There's a story you're just not letting
the
readers in on here.
It was basically that, though. It was just, there was this guy. Okay, so it was this old guy who looked like... Do you guys watch Game of Thrones?
Oh, yeah, he looked like that really evil guy, right?
He looked like Walder Frey from Game of Thrones. And which was like that... was already disturbing enough, and like in the first 2 minutes of the movie he just goes like stretches his arms out, yawns, and then sleeps through the entire movie.
Snores
through the entire movie. And like is unresponsive to the woman next to him. The woman next to him, who is like seated right in front of me, is literally like shaking him, being like, stop snoring. And he won't. And then he's like, his shoes are off. He's in his sock feet. He starts putting his feet up on the seat, like not even on the back of the seat in front of him, but like hanging over into like the back of the head of the person in front of him. This is by the end of the movie. So like this entire movie, this guy's snored on some like sort of manageably soft level, and nobody wants to get up out of their seat because nobody wants to like interrupt their own movie viewing to like get this taken care of, because then it would become a whole thing.
Right.
But finally, once he starts like kicking the head of the person in front of him, somebody gets up and like gets the the security to come by. And as the security comes by, it's like end credits. So he had gone through the entire movie, and then they end up like dragging this guy out, like could not stand under his own power. And then, Katie, you can give them the kicker.
Oh, yeah. So then we walk out of the theater onto Broadway, and he is standing on the curb as if he's, like, hailing a taxi. He's on the phone. His pants are pulled around his ankles.
What?
And according to one person we were with, he was exposing himself. I did not see that, luckily.
It was like an old man in a Simpsons cartoon where it was just sort of, like, just pants down around his ankles and just
What we found out later from the guys who were ranting the cabs at the party is that he eventually was walking down the street and started pulling flowers out of the flower pots outside the Mormon building, like, across the street. So
the Coens basically just hired him for weird ambiance, right?
Like, that he really was...
I thought that's what they hired John Goodman for.
That's true. John Goodman did, like, some physical comedy from up on the... He, like, tripped over something and, like...
He did. Oh, my God. He really almost bit it on that stage.
He was hilarious in the press conference.
Was he?
Because I was wondering why he was, like, there, because he's, like, barely in the movie. But he's great at press conferences.
He really is barely in that movie. For as much as he's in the trailer and, like, sort of talking about the movie, I feel like he got a lot of, like, advance, like, oh, John Goodman's in the new, because, you know, he's always so good at the Coens movies. But he is really barely in that movie.
Yeah.
Everybody is kind of barely in that movie besides Oscar Isaac. It's so episodic.
And the cat.
And the cat. Oh, yeah. The cat. Or cats.
FYC, Best Supporting Actor.
Oh God.
I got home and hugged my cat so hard.
Man, I'm
You're like, don't ever run out of the door.
Is this going to be better or worse for me than the Uggie campaign of 2011?
Be better for you because this movie won't raise up much of a stir.
You can't take a cat around doing tricks for voters. Like, a cat's just not going to put up with that. So
it's true. A cat does not have time for your
for your campaign shenanigans.
Your press tour? Yeah, exactly.
So, but, you know, that snoring story, that is really horrible because, you know, for those who haven't seen the movie, which is most of you, it's really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very,
it's a very mellow, like, quiet movie, except for the singing occasionally.
And the songs really do kind of lull you into, like, thinking you're at a... Like, there were a couple times where he stopped singing, and my instinct, and I stopped myself, thank God, before I embarrassed myself, but my instinct was to applaud as if I were at a concert.
A couple people did.
Yeah, because, well, it's just sort of like that, you got that feel. That was, I had very mixed feelings on the movie in general.
I did too.
But I thought all of the scenes of him performing were pristine and fantastic.
Well, his voice is out of this world.
And he gives a great performance. And I wish I liked everything else around him more, and I feel like I'm really, like, balancing it out because I loved him and I kind of hated everything else.
It's interesting because the character, I feel like, because the character himself is, you know, is an asshole, as Carey Mulligan tells him over and over again. So the fact that you like spending time with him is interesting
people around him. But I think the Coens sort of go out of their way to make everything around him worse.
Mm.
Whereas, like, Carey Mulligan is just sort of this, like, nonstop barrage of invective at him. And, like, John Goodman's a monster. And sort of the world around him is this sort of, like... it reminded me of A Serious Man a little bit, which was another Coens movie that I didn't latch onto at all. Where sort of the world is besieging this guy. And in that movie, that guy just sort of took it. And in this movie, it makes Oscar Isaac's character into an asshole.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's giving it as well as receiving it in this movie in terms of, like, the bad luck and the rough go of it.
I halfway through the movie, I kind of had the thought of, like, why am I watching another movie about an aimless guy who's fucks up and can't, you know, figure out how to get his life together, because there's so many of those and it's an exhausting trope. And there's just something about the way the Coens never feel the desire to cuddle up any of their characters. Like, they're so much more comfortable with, like, weird, prickly characters than almost anybody else. And I found it so interesting the way they kind of embrace him making these mistakes, and not like A Serious Man where, you know, the world's throwing these things at him. Like, he's creating so many of his own problems.
Yes. Yeah.
And I found that really interesting, especially when you compare him to, like, you know, he has the guy who's in the trailer who's holding the cat. He's a Fort Dix soldier.
Stark
I don't even know.
Fans.
Oh, God. He's amazing. And
such
he's
a cutie, too, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
He's like in Kinky Boots on Broadway right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Tony nominee. Yeah.
Oh, wow. He's this great, like, guileless, very nice, very talented character, and Lewin is a complete jackass to him, and you just kind of see the way this guy is trying to make it into this world that, you know, you're aware is about to blow up, and, you know, Bob Dylan kind of becomes part of the movie very, very late, very small way.
Yeah.
And I liked that contrast in this guy who, like, kept trying but not hard enough and failing, and, you know, the circularity of it.
Well, I think the Coens do a solid job of, through the course of the movie, really letting you feel his frustration and what has built inside him to lead him to behave this way, where he just, I think he says it a couple times, just like, this is what I do, this is how I make my living. Like, you get the real sort of sense of ambivalence about him within the folk scene. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like the folk scene, but this is what he's good at. This is the one thing he can do. And the frustration of that, where he doesn't even like this life he's in, and yet it's the only thing he can do for a living, and he's not even making a living at it. Like, just that extreme frustration, and then you see his dad, and I know, like, father issues are very trite and whatever, but I thought, like, it did sell it to me, and part of it is because Isaac just does a really good job. But I got it. By the end of the movie, I was like, I get it. I get what is so frustrating about his life.
Well, I don't know. I also, like, maybe it was the press comments that threw me, but the Coens, they were like, you know, somebody asked, why did you make a movie about failure?
Uh-huh.
And they were like, well, success has been done so many times, but I don't know, like, I think this type, I don't know, I think there's a lot of movies about, you know, aging bad boys who can't get their act together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Definitely. So I don't know that this is that much of, like, they were acting like nobody's done this before, and I'm like,
Oh, no. There have been a few.
So I had trouble just, like, wondering. It just, I don't want to say it felt incomplete, because it definitely felt like a whole movie, but it just felt a little minor to me, especially considering the hoopla, and even though I liked, like, Katie, you're talking about the circularity of the issues and stuff, I didn't actually like the circular structure of the movie in terms of, like,
ending where we began.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I just couldn't connect with it other than, like, the music scenes, which are plentiful, so I don't want to, deny it that. And I thought the scene, any Coen Brothers, it's hard to say that you didn't like it, because their movies are so well made that there's invariably something that's great about it.
Yeah.
And I thought the scene with, it's sort of a climactic scene, even though it's not at the end of the movie, with Oscar Isaac and F. Murray Abraham, was a spectacular scene.
Yeah.
But then the movie just kept going and lost me again. I don't know. Like, I'm not a huge fan of it.
The scene with Llewyn Davis and Justin Timberlake and Adam Driver recording
that song.
Dumb, silly.
Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Song.
Don't shoot me into space.
There's in a movie where, I mean, I'm with you guys. Like, I really didn't love it, but that scene is kind of perfect. Where, like, everybody's playing it at this weird pitch that's different from everybody else, and the comedy really sneaks up on you, and just the way they cut from person to person to person, each doing their own thing, and then, like, and every time you get back to Adam Driver, it's like it's like the first time he did it. It's just so weird, those weird little interjections he throws in, and I thought it was kind of perfect match of, like, the filmmaking style, and they got all three of these guys to give the exact right performance for that song.
Driver has, like, classic Coen's weirdo face. Like, he could have been in any of their movies before. And, totally. Like, you're like, oh, thank God he got to work with the Coen brothers. Like, I want him to show up in all of them.
Although, lately, I'm feeling like Girls is invading everything.
That's
like,
true.
It seems like the fake, because there's another actor from Girls that's in this, too.
Yeah, the fact that Alex Karpowski is in it and, like, has almost no dialogue.
He's in everything. You can't get away from that guy in New York City. Like,
in New York City.
You can't.
Like, just, like, the other day, I was getting a coffee.
I literally
feel that way. Like, I don't spot famous people in the wild ever, and I feel like I see that guy all the time.
And he's always in, like, New York Magazine. They'll be, like, spotted at, you know, they have that one page where it's just sort of, like, four parties, and they show little, like, collages of each one. He's in that thing every week. I don't understand it. I honestly
don't. He's like Llewyn Davies. He doesn't have a house.
His publicist must never sleep. Like, I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so since we're all here and Nick is not, I believe he's still sleeping. Joe, you saw Captain Phillips, right?
I did.
Because we talked outside, I believe.
Yes.
Briefly.
Yeah.
And Katie saw it.
Yep.
So, Katie, you had wanted to discuss the Best Actor race, and since
we've
all seen Captain Phillips, maybe we should talk about that.
Yes, let's do that. It's a really, really, really interesting group so far, I think.
Yeah, well, so, like, I want to start briefly with talking about if you guys have any issues with somebody where a performance, like, a whole performance is, everybody always boils it down to one particular scene, like your Oscar clip, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that's already happening with Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Sure.
For Captain Phillips, and he's very good in the movie, but it's one of those things that, it, like, the whole movie almost rests on basically his final, the final scene.
That scene really does elevate that performance, I thought. I think up till that point, I think Hanks is playing the very best version of, I kept thinking of, it's, and the tone of the movies is, could not be more different, but I kept thinking of, like, Harrison Ford in Air Force One, mm-hmm. where it's just like you get this A-lister to be the focal point of this kind of action-y blockbuster. You know, this is sort of, the, you know, the thinking man's blockbuster, but it's basically A-list Hollywood acting, which is not a pejorative for me. Like, I think that is crucial.
Well, it's very hard to do.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to do, which is why some people are very well paid for it.
And Tom Hanks has done it badly recently.
Yeah.
He doesn't command the screen every single time just by doing nothing.
Charlie Wilson's War, I think, is an example of that.
Yeah.
Honestly, though. Like, I feel like his star power kind of let him down in that movie. And I think it certainly comes to play in this thing. But then when you get to those final 15 minutes of the movie, he has two scenes where he just goes to places emotionally I can't remember him going before, even in something like Castaway or like
Philadelphia.
Like, it's different.
It's like an unguarded, it's like it doesn't even feel like acting, actually.
It's so emotionally raw, and I know that's a buzz term too, and I kind of hate myself for saying it, but it's true. Like, it's a kind of Tom Hanks you're not prepared to see, not only from his career, but from the movie that's been leading up to it. And yet the movie is so tense.
Yeah.
They're like, that release is so perfect. Like, I wasn't prepared for how perfect and affecting that was. It took the movie from like B+ to A- for me just on that alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
well, which is why I was curious what you guys thought of that, because like every time, you know, I've talked to anybody about it, and you know, after those screenings for the festival, everybody always huddles and discusses.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all anybody can talk about is the ending. And usually, if one scene is the only thing people want to discuss, I tend to find that it means that the movie's not strong, but that's not the case here.
Yeah. I don't think so either, yeah.
Well, because the movie builds up to that point so well. And I think that what's so interesting about him early in the film is you've got him as this kind of stoic hero, which is, I mean, I thought a lot about like High Noon or something like that, where you've got a Western hero, like a very iconic star up against really unbeatable odds. And for a long time, he's doing that kind of classical old thing where he's putting up a strong face. But you're watching him think a lot. Like, he's doing a lot of performing for the sake of his crew and then for the sake of the guys who take him hostage. And you're seeing inside that performance all the time, which is so interesting. And it's like a lot of it's from the filmmaking, kind of knowing what's going on outside that he would be thinking about. But he's doing a lot of really interesting small stuff. And then when you get to that point, I mean, like you were saying, it's so tense. You've gone through all this stuff with him that catharsis means so much to you. And he just... We've seen that catharsis scene done in different ways so many times, like after a tense situation. And the fact that he nails it that way and does something that, I mean, it's crazy that Tom Hanks surprised us that way. Like, who knew that he could do something that we hadn't seen in him before? Because he's so familiar.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so actually, Nick just arrived, so let me pull him into the conversation.
All right.
Listen to us gush about Captain Phillips, which he hasn't seen. Poor guy.
Well, actually,
now we can
move on
to
from
the
Captain Phillips.
Or just like the Best Actor race.
Yeah, I would love to talk about that.
Because the Foxcatcher Wolf of Wall Street news impacts it almost as much as
Well, Wolf of Wall Street still might be 2014, right?
Right.
That hasn't been determined.
It hasn't been announced officially yet, right?
Let's see if Nick picked up. Nick?
Oh, I'm here. I'm just
talking
how it hasn't changed. Hi!
We were so into the conversation, nobody even allowed you to say hello.
That's okay. I was just going to say something mean about how moving to Wolf of Wall Street doesn't change Best Actor at all, because he's going to suck.
So now we wanted to talk about the Best Actor race. I wrote an article that was, it was intended to be slightly provocative, because I know people don't agree with it, saying that there's no front runner.
And it had six possible winners.
Yes, and it had six possible winners. And, you
can
know,
I ask?
Of course, I got a million responses like, that's so stupid, Matthew McConaughey is going to win. You know?
That's so weird, because my immediate thought was, oh, were people yelling at you because of Chiwetel Ejiofor? Like, but honestly, like, it wouldn't have jumped to my mind that Matthew McConaughey is an ironclad lock for frontrunner. Like,
yeah, me neither.
I personally think Robert Redford's going to win, but I feel like there's no call for calling anybody a lock in this race.
Well, that's why I think it's such an interesting race, which is why I think Katie wanted to discuss it as well. And since we usually talk about actresses, let's change the tide a little.
Well, I feel like...
Maybe.
Yeah,
just this week.
I'm basing this on nothing but just vague memories, but it feels like Best Actor is usually the one that has a front runner up front. Like, there's always some Daniel Day-Lewis-y kind of performance that everyone's like, oh, that's going to be the one. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there are so many of these is so interesting. And, like...
Yeah.
It's hard to see how it's really hard to see what is going to jump in, like what the thing is that's going to come in and be like, okay, well, we're all going to rally behind that. Mm-hmm. And it's been a long time since Best Actor went in that direction. And I'm going to Wikipedia it just to make sure I'm not being crazy and misremembering something.
Well, I mean, of course, it is only, September, October.
Yeah.
But so
Fair enough.
We could very well have a front runner. But my point is, like, people are so eager to say, this is all, the race is over. And I just feel like it's really, really just starting, especially with this category.
Why McConaughey, though? I don't recall the Toronto reception being that same.
I think it's because people were so into the sort of build-up of, like, now he's a genuine actor thing.
But it's not like they even nominated him.
Right. It would be different if they had shown their love, in a way, with Magic Mike.
Yeah.
I don't know. Nick, what do you think?
I don't know either. I'm just agreeing with all of you. That's what I'm about. It makes sense to me. It reminds me, you wrote a similar article in 08, I think, because Milk and The Wrestler were on the way, and, you know, at that point, Revolutionary Road, even though it turned out that he sucked, so it didn't matter. But there were a lot of, you know, there were a lot of contenders, you know, this early, but I agree with Katie. It usually feels a little bit more like you can see one movie coming that will really kick off this race, and I think the race is well underway.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's like 2008's an interesting comparison, because even though people wanted to, you know, narrow that down, that never really got narrowed down. It was like a nail biter till the very last moment, actually, between Mickey Rourke and Sean Penn.
And in 2011 with Jean Dujardin and George Clooney, I remember being a similar kind of nail biter. Mm-hmm. But I guess it's hard to know, like, the best picture thing floating the actor up to the top. I mean, that's definitely the phenomenon that could sort this out. But again, it's hard to know what that might be at this point.
But see, even if you go by that, which is wise since so many best pictures come with the best actor statue, even then, you know, Tom Hanks and Chiwetel Ejiofor, I mean, I think both of those movies are, there's no way they're not getting Best Picture nominations.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And also, the idea of Robert Redford getting the veterans momentum, what does a possible Bruce Dern nomination do to that in terms of kind of splitting the narrative, or at least kind of siphoning that narrative? I'm not sure Bruce Dern is anything close to a sure thing, but if he does, you know what I mean, if he ends up there, then all of a sudden that could take away some of the Redford momentum that way. And I think this is kind of the best time of the year to talk about Oscars, honestly, because there is so much possibility and there is so little, like, orthodoxy about what we know, you know what I mean? There's still so much we don't know. Like, I mean, Joaquin Phoenix could blow everybody away in Her or something like that. Like,
right.
You know, or like, nobody's seen American Hustle as far as I know, right? Like, Christian Bale could be, you know, a huge barn burner, you know, storming the category late kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then there's...
Sorry. Oh, go ahead, Joe.
Oh, I was just going to say, just there's still, you know, Michael B. Jordan from the beginning of the year. And I know nobody thinks it, but I think, you know, Forrest Whitaker could still probably end up in the conversation for The Butler if The Butler sort of lingers in this Best Picture race.
Yeah. As much as I am excited about American Hustle, I feel like the most boring outcome for this is that it opens in December and then just everyone goes crazy and gives it everything.
Yeah.
Which it could totally happen. I mean, yeah, Silver Linings Playbook got that for acting nominations.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe it'll be great and I'll feel great about that, but I hate the idea that like all of this would just be moot once David O. Russell comes and like, just sweeps the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like brush all the early releases like Duchesses off the table.
What about that other? Did the other Christian Bale movie, Out of the Furnace, did that get moved?
No,
is that still coming out. Also,
about it.
It keeps feeling like it's going to be because no one's talking about it yet.
I have seen that trailer so many times.
It's the boy version of Grace of Monaco. It's just sort of like everybody assumes it's going to move, but nobody really is talking about it at all.
Yeah, and it just like every time I go to the movies, that place.
It'd be so much nicer if there were a boy version of Grace of Monaco. Just let somebody play it.
It's called Ace of Monaco, and
Ma vie en Monaco.
And then of course, you know, we glancingly mentioned it, but Foxcatcher has been moved, and I had viewed Steve Carell as like the main contender that people weren't taking seriously enough. So I was wrong there, since he's gone.
Well, you could still be right, just future,
right?
It'll
be the 2014 contender nobody's talking about. So.
Do we assume that that's going to be fall next year? Like, they're just going to do a full year push?
I feel like that's what they usually do, which is sad.
Unless it's Grace of Monaco.
Unless it's, like, Scorsese, you know, because, like, Shutter Island did that early year.
Yeah, Scorsese can open whenever, and I feel like he'll still get all the attention that it would have gotten.
But Shutter Island got no nominations, so they kind of...
But Shutter Island was bad.
Well, yeah. I mean, but it was also more of a popular... I don't think it was bad, but it was more of a popular kind of thing.
Right. Well, yeah, it wasn't the genre that Oscar's going to go for.
Which is why when they said, well, open Grace of Monaco for commercial play in the spring, and I'm like, oh boy, no you won't.
Yeah, well, there's no time to open Grace of Monaco for commercial play.
Hey!
I'm sorry,
Nick,
but it's true.
You were about to say something.
I was just going to agree with Katie that you know, the December release date of Shutter Island was misinterpreted for a while, that it was like a Christmas potboiler, not a Christmas prestige play. So you can release that in February, sure.
Yeah, I mean, people forget that every year, that Christmas does have, like, mainstream releases with reputable prestige stars that aren't really intended.
Right.
Exactly for anything other than box office, which I think is this year is Monuments Men.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and
unless they collectively win Best Actor, all of them.
Well, and it's
and
what
why not?
It's what makes Walter Mitty so interesting too. I think
that
could be.
It could go either way.
It could go either way, exactly. And because also, like from far ahead, Hugo looked like it was going to be that kind of prestige-y or you know, moneymaker rather than awards play, just because it was so.
Fantastical,
budget and fantastical and sort of kid oriented, and then it got so well received that it got put into the Oscar race. And I feel like Walter Mitty, if it's good, and I mean Ben Stiller's no Martin Scorsese, I know, shocker headline, but it could be good, and it could, you know, sort of capture people's imaginations. And
wouldn't it be wonderful if I know this is like utopia, but wouldn't it be wonderful if that was always the conversation, if it's good?
Sure.
Because, you know, certain types of movies, they only have to be okay to still be in the conversation. And then other genres and types, they have to be really great to sort of transcend whatever they were intended for.
I still feel like more often than not, even if it's not something that ultimately seems great, it's usually something that generates enthusiasm. I feel like the Frost Nixons are so the minority of like... Oh, it was okay. But
really? Because I kind of feel like we have that every year, like Doubt. Like, were people enthusiastic about that?
But Doubt didn't get a Best Picture nomination.
No, but it got, you know, all the main characters got nominated.
I know. I just feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm being September optimistic and talk to me again in January. But, like, I don't know. I feel like more often is the case where it's just, you know, it's something like The Artist, where it's like, I didn't love it, but like a lot of people really did, and sort of, yeah. It is, that's genuine enthusiasm, and I'm, you know, and good for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and last year, if I'm remembering correctly, like there, it didn't feel like, even with the 10, you know, expansion, the amount of filler is still kept remarkably low, which is extremely low and incredibly close aside, and you know, I guess there's one or two every year, but I don't feel quite as pessimistic about it as I could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's been pretty great lately. There have been a lot of, even with those huge fields, ever since they opened it up, there have been a lot of movies that a lot of people really resonate with a lot of people, even when they're divisive.
Friggin' Amour got a Best Picture nomination, you guys. We live in amazing times.
Yeah, that's true.
It is true, yeah, honestly.
And was better directed than Argo, apparently. Yeah.
That's right.
It's supposed to be alive.
Yeah, don't say apparently. It's fact.
Yeah.
Oscars is law.
Yes, first rule of podcasting. Everything you say is...
Is something different with your mic today, Nick?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You sound slightly far away sometimes, but you sound okay.
Far away, as in, far away, disinterested. We're talking about Best Actor.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess, sure.
You're like, do I have to talk about Leonardo DiCaprio?
So for now, no.
Nobody's talking about Hugh Jackman shouting his way into the Best Actor race with Prisoners, right?
Do we think that's going to happen?
No, I don't. I was kind of making a joke, but then nobody laughed. It was fun. Oh. He was so shouty. He yelled so much in that movie.
See, that's the funny thing is because when I was done watching that movie, I thought, what a remarkably subtle performance compared to what I was expecting.
Really?
Not...
I thought the same thing as Nathaniel.
Wow!
Like, there was a lot of shouting, yes, but it was so much... he was doing so many other things that I wasn't expecting based on the trailer.
Huh.
But he's still named Peller Dover. I still have a problem with that.
Ugh.
This is the worst character. It's like that script was written by someone who didn't speak English, Nate. I mean, I know the director is French-Canadian, but like the scriptwriter, person who named him Peller Dover speaks English, and that is unacceptable.
I think it must be the person who called Sean Penn Tobin Keller and the interpreter. Like, there's just some malefactor out there who's doing this. No one's called any of those things.
Okay, that was a really short podcast, but thanks for talking the Best Actor race and a couple of previews of things that are about to open for you from the New York Film Festival. And thanks for joining me, Joe Reed.
Hi, bye.
Katie Rich.
My name is not Keller Dover.
And Nick Davis.
I was barely here.
And you weren't at the New York Film Festival, but you have the Chicago Festival to look forward to.
As does Joe.
As do I. What?
Woo. What? You're going there?
I am. Spending five glorious days in Chicago, Illinois.
And when is that?
Mid-October.
Like
I can never remember the exact
weeks?
Day. Yeah, a couple weeks. Very excited, Nick. I'm very, very excited.
Okay, so look forward to reports from Joe and Nick on the Chicago Film Festival.
Yeah.
Okay, bye. Without the one you love,
in jazz, you know, we play all the notes. 12 notes in a scale, not three chords on a ukulele. Oh, if you make a living at it, more power to you.
My honey, fair.